You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
And your girl man save her. Better believe it, get on her knees and pray hard, then pray hard. And never look back once the world forgave you. Then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when to turn right, but you turn all the way left.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are so glad that you're here today. I'm glad I'm here today, and I'm especially comforted that our guest is with us today. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Yes, I'm Dwayne Braveboy. I am Tuscarora from the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina.
How wonderful that you're here. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's always an honor to be here.
One of the great things that having you here does for us is it gives us a chance to learn from your wisdom and your knowledge and your joy, and we are really grateful for that opportunity. So what's been on my mind, and I am so excited to discuss it with you today, are two words, indigenize and decolonize. And I'd like to start by asking you what the word indigenize means to you.
To me, when one indigenizes, they are without any outward bias. They are just taking what is theirs and reflecting their culture, their traditions, their language, and their own lives.
What a lovely way to look at it. I think that's beautiful. And I think that when we indigenize our lives, we are infusing our cultures, our worldview, everything else, into every area of our lives, which is magnificent.
Yes. We have, for example, language immersion courses. Well, indigenizing is sort of cultural immersion in your own life.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful example. Thank you so much for using that. What does it mean to you when I say decolonize?
Oh, that's, for example, when people, you know, like here on the East Coast Indian nations have been living with colonization and therefore assimilation for a lot longer than, say, Plains tribes. And so we have this burden, you know, that we have here, that just the assimilation is just oppressive. So so over the years, you know, we eventually realized, hey, we're not doing things our own way anymore. This isn't traditional. You know, this is not the way, you know, we stop doing ceremonies, or we stop doing this particular ceremony for this colonized reason. You know, and I mean, I know that there are some natives who won't participate in Feast of the Dead because it has the word dead in it, and their assimilated worldview, they believe that, you know, this must be something spooky, you know, like hoodoo or something, you know. And so they just, you know, they stop doing these things that we've done for millennia. So decolonizing is, in this particular example, because it's such a broad topic, decolonizing is acknowledging what it is that is turning us against ourselves and turning away from our traditional culture and disusing, stopping to use our languages, and acknowledge why we're doing that, and then shedding that and saying, okay, this is this my worldview got hijacked, and I'm walking down the wrong path now, or I'm walking down a path that is leading me away from my people, from my culture, from my ancestors, from everything that has made my people who we are for millennia. I'm walking away from it. And so decolonizing is acknowledging that someone is going down a different path and turning around and going back and getting on the right path and, you know, embracing our traditions, our original cultures, our languages, and getting things right. You know, it's like our word in Tuscarora for decolonize is Nyagwariwachakwasnahatnya, which is breaking that down. It just comes back to we're going along, putting our matters right again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that word. I really love that word. I think the beauty of what you're saying to us also is, for so long, assimilation taught us everything is wrong with you. It's you. You're the one that's wrong. Right. And this outside system being imposed on you, colonialism, is right. And so one of the first things I see when you say putting things right, setting things right, is almost like a divine reset to who you were created to be. And I love that, don't you?
I do too. Yes, I do. I think it's a powerful thing. It's a powerful word and with a powerful meaning.
Mm-hmm. Detox. I'm thinking about the great author, James Baldwin. He once said, and I'm paraphrasing, but he once said that he had been taught so many awful things about himself and his people and his culture, the great African-American culture, that he literally almost had to vomit all of the bad teachings up before he could start loving himself. And so I wonder, is decolonizing almost like a detox?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, decolonizing detox is a way to describe decolonizing. You know, for example, there are these literally, like, spiritually toxic components of colonization. Like, for example, the settlers, you know, they've got this belief about sparing the rod and spoiling the child, and, you know, implying that children need to be beaten to shape them into something that their parents want them to be, I guess, but, you know, that's never been, you know, violence against our children, violence against our women, that's never been our way. That goes against our culture and our teachings. You know, like I can say in Tuscarora culture specifically, I don't want to speak for, you know, all 500 nations, but I can say in my culture, something that we do to teach our values and morals to our children is through stories. You know, that's why we have a long storytelling season.
Mm-hmm.
And the children are always there. And that's, you know, we tell them stories in the home. We tell them in group settings, like our recent summer camp that we had. You know, this is how we impart or instill our cultural values and such into our children, not with a belt, you know?
Right.
That's not our way, but that was this toxic, spiritually toxic thing that the settlers brought with them here. And so that's something that we have to turn away from. We have to, you know, I'm not saying that it's necessarily a big problem in my community, but I do know that it's there.
Yeah.
And we just have to turn away from that. We have to collectively just acknowledge it for what it is, that it is spiritually, emotionally toxic to our families, to our mm-hmm. children. Mm-hmm. And then from that point, we have to just turn away from it and say, okay, we acknowledge this for what it is. We're no longer going to ever do this again. We'll have to find another way.
Yes. And the other way is where we indigenize, right? Like,
right.
In other words, we were given something that is toxic. It is bad for us. It doesn't suit us. It isn't helping. What do we have? What's on the old path? What are our ways of dealing with this? I mean, this is where I appreciate your wisdom so much, because I see the toxicity of it, especially for those of us who are in the Southeast tribes. We're in the Bible Belt. And so
right.
I hear people who have wholeheartedly adopted these kinds of heart attitudes and yet not adopted the teachings, perhaps, of Jesus that would make him a pretty good tribal member, you know, right?
Like, right.
You know?
Like, right.
Well, giving away, sharing, feeding the poor, clothing the naked, hey, this is good stuff. And yet it
sounds Tuscarora to me.
That is, and absolutely. And I think, wow, but you're choosing to adopt the parts that are not helpful and won't
right.
make people whole. So we're gonna have to think about ourselves as well. I mean, God gave us our ways. Our ways are good. He loves us.
Yes.
So how can we then look at our ways and our paths and say, you know, it's kind of like if someone gave you a gift. They gave you a gift. You opened up a gift box, and it was a box of trash. You know, wow, this stinks.
Right.
It's trash. It doesn't, I don't have any use for this. I don't need this. This is terrible. And yet you take it home and save it like it's a treasure. Well, they gave it to me. They did. But meanwhile, it's breeding flies, and it's, you know, it's rotting, and it's making your house and your life smell bad. And yet you're going to hold on to it because someone told me this was a gift to me. This, somebody gave me this. Yeah. You don't need that. You don't need that. And decolonizing.
No, we don't.
Is the maturation to be able to say, you know, there's trash in that box. You know? As opposed to it's just great just because certain people gave it to you.
Right. Yeah, those are all great points and great analogies, you know, that is so spot on perfect.
You know, every time we have these kinds of conversations, we have a wonderful opportunity. I believe just talking about these things is a decolonization. We are decolonizing our minds just by talking about these things. But then we have to take the next step and indigenize, right? You can't just say, well, I threw that box of trash in the outhouse. You know, I threw it away. I don't have it anymore. But I don't have anything else either. Well, yes, you do. You have the gifts and the wisdom of your culture, of whole and healed leaders and elders, right? Because every older ain't an elder. My granddaddy used to say that.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, you have these wonderful things, and they belong to you. They're yours, your culture. And so I would love it if you would help us with that actual process. Like, once we realize perhaps a belief or an idea doesn't fit us, it isn't ours, it's hurting us, where do we find the actual courage to toss it and replace it?
You know, this is something that I just had a conversation with somebody about yesterday. And we were speaking of the opioid epidemic in Indian country. I mean, it's all over, but, you know, and other communities as well, but it's also in, you know, Indian communities. And, you know, how is it that some of us, like, say, he and I, and you, you know, people like us, who just instinctively knew from a very young age that if we ever started down this path,
right,
of opioids or drugs or, and you know, alcohol abuse and such, you know, that it's not going to help me out. It's not going to lead to anywhere good. And some of us just had, you know, I think I said, you know, I'm just grateful for the soul I was born with that has kept me from ever going down those very dark paths. But then there are people who do, you know, and so what do we do? What do they do? You know, when they realize that they are going down a path, whether it is spiritually or physically, mentally toxic for them, you know, when they get halfway down the path, you know, what can bring them back? You know, it has to be a personal decision. I'm old enough, you know, one of the advantages of being my age is that I know these things now, you know. It is true. Yeah. There is a kernel of truth.
Mm-hmm.
There is a kernel of truth in these old adages and stuff. You know, it's not a lot of truth. It's not a whole ear of corn of truth. But like leading a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. People have to make an individual conscious decision that they want a better life and then do whatever it takes to get there. They have to stop. Want to stop, you know, their alcohol abuse, or they have to choose to stop, you know, with the drugs and the cigarettes. You know, I was saying yesterday, you know, tobacco is for ceremony, not cigarettes.
Right.
And yeah, I also said yesterday, and you know, this is with the Commission of Indian Affairs. He said that he's going to use it. You know, we were talking about this. I was like, yeah, opioids are the new smallpox. And so people have to make a conscious decision that they want to stop. Otherwise, they'll never have the strength to do it. You know, you can't make anybody do anything. I realize that. You know, people will have to choose to stop doing said toxic thing. The thing is, we have to be there for those people because those things really weaken a people. A toxic worldview, a polluted body with alcohol and drugs, you know, these people have been weakened by all of these things. And so they need to see some light, you know, because that path is a very
mm-hmm.
dark place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are those of us who just need to be the light that others need to see. We need to light their darkness so that, you know, we can't make them come back to the fire, as I say. But we can light the fire and keep the fire lit so that they can find their way back.
Yes. Oh, that is beautiful. Thank you. Because we have to give them something, too. One thing that colonialism does is it gives you rules and regulations and don'ts. What you can't have, what you are not, what you can't do, right? And
right.
Indigenizing gives you what to do. Indigenizing gives you life, life and
yeah.
energy and grace and hope. So colonialism, for instance, says, don't speak that language. Just don't speak that language. Don't speak it.
Right.
And throws around words like witchcraft to intimidate you.
Right.
Or, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so if you learn to dance like that, oh my goodness, right? Those are things that
yeah.
you shouldn't do. But colonialism never
right.
tells you what you were created to do. So
yeah.
the problem is now there's a void. And the drugs are not attractive. If you're involved in your culture, if you're involved in the things that give you life and worth and value and meaning, serving your people, drugs doesn't look like fun anymore. A lot
right.
of things don't look even attractive or interesting. And I'm not talking about real addiction issues. We're not hating on anybody that's struggling. We're just saying that if you give our teens and our young people, let's say, culture, they don't go looking for drugs.
Right. Right. This was also something that I said in this conversation yesterday, was this was one of the fundamental reasons why I started on the path that I got started on a long time ago when I was 21. You know, this path was to reclaim the sacred, take it all back. You know, I was decolonizing back then and indigenizing. You know, I was learning all I could about the language. I was learning all I could about our history and our culture and all of this, and just more and more and more as time went on, because I felt like eventually I realized, you know, maybe this is what Creator intended for me to do, you know, because I am somebody that, you know, can be a part of the healing process, you know, and I believe that if people have culture, Indians have culture, and they know their language and they know their culture and they keep their ceremonies and such and abide by our customs and everything, that strength, there is strength in that. And that strength is stronger than any drug. It's just so much stronger than anything else, and that will sustain us. And that's why I worry that as in 2024, there's a thousand different ways to that colonization and assimilation tells us, you know, and informs us or otherwise inspires us to not be Indian anymore. Let's all just be a big melting pot, and you forget your Indian languages, and you forget your Indian clothing, and you forget everything about being Indian. We're all just the same. I mean, I literally had a boss one time that told me this. And he got an earful in response. But
wow.
Yeah, we, truth to power. And, but this is such a strong, strong system, you know, and I feel like if people have it, they're not going to want to look for something like drugs, you know, to make them feel better. You know, they're going to feel better because they know their language. They can communicate with other people who speak the language. They're not going to need the drug to make them feel good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be participating in ceremonies that we've had since time immemorial,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to feel strong in that. And so they're not going to need to feel strong by getting drunk,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is the opposite of being strong, but
that's right.
You know, yeah. So this colonization, assimilation, it's changed so many natives' worldviews about what is strong, what it means to be strong, you know, and some of us know better.
Yes, yes. I'm thinking about even families. You know, the idea now that to be a strong family, you have to have a strong leader, authoritarian, strong discipline over the kids, you know. And that's the violence, the domestic violence, the hurt and misery. That's what makes you a strong father or a strong mother. And we were never that way. All of our nations,
right,
regardless of whether they had hawk feathers or eagle feathers or macaw feathers or whether they did stomp dance or whether they did sun dance, all of our nations were known for our love. Our love for our children, our love for our families, our respect for our women and our elders. You know, those were hallmarks. I mean, people looking at us, people on the outside looking at our cultures as they first found them, remarked on how much we loved our children, how much respect there was for the matriarchs, how elders were treated. In Europe, elders didn't fare very well. But
right.
Here, our elders were treasured and honored and treated with respect. And that was cross-cultural. That was intertribal. That was not just, oh, well, yeah, they do a great job of that in Tuscarora Nation, which you do. But they also did a fantastic job of taking care of children and women and elders in the Muscogee culture and in so
Absolutely.
Many other tribes, right? And colonization,
right.
assimilation, colonization, this sort of desperate push to rob us of who we are, those kind of things were forgotten. Now, if you really want good children, this is how you'll treat them. When we already had good children, we understood that they came here good. They were given to
mm-hmm.
us as gifts. They were lovely. Oh, well, if you know, your wife, you really need to get these women under control. You really, you know, you need to do all the,
right.
the leading and all the... And so we have now domestic violence. We have, you know, and we're not picking on any tribe. We're not saying that other groups of people don't have these things. But we know where they came from.
Right.
And so
right.
the beautiful thing about, you know, I don't know if you are so wise and wonderful. You probably don't have this very often, but I kind of do. There are times in my life when things are going wrong and I realize I'm the problem. And I really love that because if I'm the problem, I can do something about that. If something else is
mm-hmm.
the problem, I can't control everything. But I can change
right.
my behavior. I can change my thinking. I can decolonize my thoughts. I can indigenize me and move forward.
Right.
And so sometimes I think we have to have these conversations because this is how we fix it. This is how we take steps toward healing and repairing and walking on good paths.
Yes.
So here's the thing. Let's say that we're looking at our lives and they're pretty colonized. You know, right? I mean, there are some people, their lives are literally colonialism. They're a picture of it. They
yes.
you know, they drank the Kool-Aid. They bought into the whole colonization structure. I'm thinking about this political cycle. We've seen quite a few people who I'm surprised by. I'm surprised.
Right.
You know, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're really? I'm surprised by who they support. And they are Native
right.
people.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
What is the incentive, the reward, for us to indigenize our lives, especially for those who are already pretty completely colonized?
Right. The benefit is that we get to survive. Because this path of colonization and assimilation, that path only leads to well, it might lead down several different paths, but what it will lead completely away from is our survival. And that is fundamentally at the heart of the matter. We won't survive
mm-hmm.
that way. If we let our DNA be the sole representation of our Indianness, then we're essentially dead at that point.
Yes.
So if people, if Indians see the value in knowing our languages, knowing our culture, keeping the ceremonies, you know, abiding by our customs, you know, regarding each other in a traditional way, that is what will cause us to endure. But colonization and assimilation, its goal from the beginning, and we've seen it 100 different ways, you know, has been to eradicate Turtle Island of Indian people. I mean, something that a lot of people I talk to don't know about is that, you know, on the East Coast, especially, you know, which was the point of contact for European settlers, these, what became states on the East Coast, they prided themselves on being rid of their quote-unquote Indian problem.
Right.
I know Pennsylvania was one, you know, and the Tuscarora, after our war with the colonists here, because, you know, it wasn't that Tuscaroras just didn't like white people, and so we just went out and slaughtered them or bullied them or whatever. No, we gave them land to stay on. We taught them how to farm on this land, which apparently was different than farming where they came from. You know, we were welcoming to them, but it was them who started kidnapping our people and selling them into slavery. And so after the war that was the cause of, there was a delegation of Tuscaroras who went to Pennsylvania to ask about resettling there. And Pennsylvania said no, because they had just gotten rid of their Indian problem, and they weren't going to welcome any more Indians into their state. So, you know, the goal has always been to erase us. I mean, there's the paper genocide, you know, here in North Carolina. You know, the state, on the first U.S. census, the state chose to enumerate Indians as free persons of color. You know, we're not white, we're not black, but they didn't want to say Indian because legally they wanted to erase us. So if they enumerated us as Indians, then it would reflect an Indian population in North Carolina. So rather than just do that, they enumerated us as free persons of color. And also, free persons of color can't make land claims. Indians can. So, and then subsequently that was too vague, or not too vague, I should say, but the opposite. It was actually a little bit too specific, because it was very obvious to people, you know, well, yeah, these free persons of color, well, they're not white, they're not black, so these are the Indians. So that was a little bit too obvious. And so then later on in 1810, I believe it was, they changed it from free persons of color to mulatto. And assigned that designation to Indians in the state until 1890, when they first enumerated us as our rightful race of Indian, but that census burned and it's not available. So 1900 is the first census that's available with us enumerated in North Carolina as our rightful race of Indian. So this is, the goal has always been to erase us. And if we subscribe to that, and follow their lead down that path of assimilation, we are self-erasing.
This is so powerful, because this is paper genocide.
Yes.
And I think we're used to talking about genocide in terms of full frontal, right? I mean, residential schools and actual Indian wars and all of those things. But then there is a more sophisticated kind of genocide, paper genocide. And then paper genocide seems to lead to perspective genocide, where we police ourselves, right? Well, that person isn't Indian enough. Person's not native enough. Or if you don't do these things, or if you do these things, those become the barometer of who is indigenous and who's not. And then we have the gatekeepers and people mm-hmm. who are reconnecting and people who are trying to decolonize or indigenize, right? Become casualties of this. And mm-hmm. eventually what we have are people who, my granddaddy used to say, all we'll have left is brown white people, and we don't need brown white people. We need all the people that Creator intended.
Right.
This is such a great conversation. We have to take a quick break for commercial, but this is amazing. And as we go to break, are there websites, are there places where people can find out more about your nation, about the work that you do?
Yes, www.TuscaroraNationNC.com.
Excellent. We'll all go look at that while we listen to this, and then we'll be right back for more of this amazing conversation.
Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back once the world forgave you.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcasts for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcast. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage, scroll down to Featured Podcast, click on Play, or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come. Another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presents, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hey, I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something, serious. I know you love me, I know you like using me wherever you are, but I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
I am so thankful for this conversation. So thankful to be speaking with our guest once again. We truly love him, and he is such a precious part of our lives and our family, and we are so thankful. Would you please reintroduce yourself to us?
Yes, I am Dwayne Grayboy, and I'm Tuscarora from the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina.
I'm glad you're here. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. Always an honor to be here.
One of the ways that it's especially helpful sometimes to talk about these issues that are very deep and very broad, right, is to think about what other people are saying about them. When I was at Harvard in social studies, my focus was popular culture, media, multicultural, and indigenous studies, and they encouraged us that sometimes when you came to a topic that was so important and monumental, as you said, we won't survive. We won't survive without something happening and being different. They said sometimes a great place to start with an overwhelming topic like this is to see what somebody else said and think about it and reflect on it. And so I'm just going to try a couple of quotes here. And these quotations are from people who are respected, great people. And let's talk about them. Let's talk about this topic and see what other people are saying. So here is from the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, which is very near and dear to my heart. I want to read this to you. This is from Manari Ushigwa, who is a Sapara spiritual leader, one of these, you know, precious tribes. We have lost our relationship with our land and life itself, but it's not too late to turn the story around. If we begin to remember our dreams and live consciously as one member in this network of life, the story of humanity can continue. What are your thoughts on that?
Wow, that is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
That is powerful. Right off, I would say that it feels hopeful. I think it feels hopeful to me because it's so profound in its meaning.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of thing that I wish all natives could read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish just that could be required reading, you know, to all natives. And be like, you need to read this. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, just this passage and understand it, you know, and then have a discussion about it. You know, this is a good idea. I mean, you know, this is something that we do once in a while. We don't do it as much as we should, mm-hmm. but talking circles.
Yeah.
And I mm-hmm. think that, you know, this is a sort of a quote that we need to open a talking circle with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get everyone's, that's the one way we could indigenize, you know, get a great mm-hmm. quote like that in a talking circle and mm-hmm. let's go around the circle and have everyone give their thoughts on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on it? What does it mean to you?
I think we are at a point in our lives, you know, this political cycle has really impacted me a great deal because I don't believe we can go back and survive. We're at a point in our life where we need someone like this great leader to just tell us plainly, this is not a good space that we are in, but we can change it. We have hope that we can change it. We have to put in the effort and the work. It's time. We can't put it off anymore. And I say to people all of the time when they say, oh, I want to start dancing someday, I say, welcome to someday.
Yeah.
Someday is now. If you don't
right.
start dancing now, I can't promise you you'll have another chance to do that. I am going to learn my language. Even if it's just one word a day, if it's just how to say please and thank you, hello, and I love you, that you'll have to do it now. It's now. We can't put it off anymore.
Yeah.
We just can't. And that's what a quote like this says to me. It's time. Let's go. And I have another one from Chief Arvel Looking Horse, who, wow.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Tremendous leader, pipe carrier. And I think it's really timely for right now with what's happening in the world today on so many levels, right? Not just politics, but climate and pandemics and poverty and all these other things that are happening in the world today. We must start thinking globally, I think, not just, you know, well, looks pretty good around here. Does it, though? So here is the next one I want to read to us. Each of us is put here in this time and this place to personally decide the future of humankind. Did you think the Creator would create unnecessary people in a time of such terrible danger? Know that you yourself are essential to this world. Chief Arvel Looking Horse.
Yes, a great leader. A great leader. This is, and I've said this in my own way over the years, because this is a traditional a traditional Tuscarora way of thinking. That there are no unnecessary people, that everybody in our society serves a purpose. And no wasted people. Everyone serves a purpose. Everyone has a job, something to do, something that they can offer, something they can continue within our people, to keep our people and culture alive. So this is a concept I'm familiar with. And this is something, it's like I've internalized this. I think there are other people who have forgotten this. And I feel like maybe one of my responsibilities is to remind them of this, that we have to, especially at this point in time, you know, we can't sit this one out. You know, we can't continue sitting on the sidelines. You know, we can't sit in the back and make ourselves small and be quiet. You know, we have to stand up and speak up for what is right, which is the environment, you know, the ecology, the you know, some politicians in America have been trying to get the Violence Against Women Act passed. And then there are other ones that actually oppose it. Who in their right soul could oppose a law about violence against women? Like, no, we're okay with it.
Who is okay with it?
We're okay with this. You know? It's bizarre. I cannot believe that a single person would be shameless enough to support not passing that law. You know, so we're here and it's now, and we've got work to do. You know, I feel like there are some people who feel like they don't matter, that they don't have a purpose. And again, I feel like that's partially because of assimilation. You know, they're just kind of like leaves in the wind. You know, they're maybe too afraid to stand up and be Indian because they're going to get attacked for it or dragged for it to some degree, you know, and they just don't want to subject themselves to that. I mean, you know, it's self-preservation is a natural human instinct, but some of us just do what has to be done anyhow, regardless of the consequence. But, you know, I feel like people need to be reminded. You know, there are people who are doing the right things, doing what they should be doing. And then there are the people that, you know, we see on the sidelines and stay quiet and never do anything. They need to be reminded.
Strong hearts to the front.
Yes.
Crazy horse, right? And I think we're at a point now where we don't have any place but the front. There's nobody to hide behind. There's no one that we can lose or leave behind at this point. And we have to think about that seventh generation, too. You know, what, okay, you might survive this round, but what about your children, your grandchildren, their children and grandchildren? What kind of world are we leaving them if we don't make it wonderful now? I have a quotation that I want to read to you from Wilma Mankiller, and I've been thinking about her a lot, first chief of Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, for that was female, and especially
right.
on the horizon, right, our current political landscape, oh my goodness. I want to read this from Chief Wilma Mankiller and get your thoughts. Cows run away from the storm while the buffalo charges toward it and gets through it quicker. Whenever I'm confronted with a tough challenge, I do not prolong the torment. I become the buffalo.
Yeah, that's. I've not heard that quote from her. That's a great quote.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great quote. And she was a great lady.
Mm-hmm.
Great warrior woman, mm-hmm. great leader. You know, I've always respected Wilma Mankiller.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a wonderful quote. And, you know, I relate to that. It speaks to me because this is the way that I am.
Mm-hmm.
In my adult life, I mean, you know, when I was a child, I was, you know, as a child, I was a little more reserved about things. Not timid, but just reserved. But, you know, in my adult life,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, some people run from the storm.
Mm-hmm.
They run for shelter. I am one who never does that,
mm-hmm.
Metaphorically or physically. I never run in the rain. You know, I don't. And people have asked me before, you know, like, why do you not run from these metaphorical storms
mm-hmm.
the way that other people do? I'm like, because where I'm from, I had nowhere left to hide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I had to become someone who faces the storms head on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to become that man.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the way that I still am today, to this very day.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a great quote from her. It resonates with me, and it validates me. And, you know, in a very real way, I feel like I needed to hear that today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I've, you know, I've been in a political situation right now where, you know, there's somebody saying, you know, no, stay down, you know, don't take a stand. And
mm-hmm.
I'm saying, and under the circumstance, you know, I will take a stand,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I needed to hear that today. It, timely, very mm-hmm. timely.
I also see it as a wonderful way of describing indigenizing and decolonizing. That there are times in our lives when we just have to stop the behavior. It's toxic. There are times in our lives and our tribes and our nations when we just have to decolonize. Even if it's painful, even, you know, we don't have any more time. We could set up a commission to talk about decolonizing and then have meetings where we research if we should decolonize or not. And then maybe, you know, we could talk about it some more, except that time's a-wasting. Daylight's burning. And so is the rest of the world. And so there are just moments I think we come to as people and as individuals where we just must. If we indigenize now, our children won't have to suffer later. If we
yes,
decolonize
we do it.
Now, mm-hmm. decolonize
I've
now,
been saying, like, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go right ahead, please.
No.
I think they're just moments where if we decolonize now, we may endure a little bit of pain or misunderstanding or discomfort or even disfavor. But our grandchildren won't have to.
Right.
And that's what means the most to me. Mm-hmm.
We are strong enough people to take on that burden.
Yes.
You know, so that we want a better life for our children and grandchildren. That's what a good ancestor would do, just exactly mm-hmm. the way that you're living your life, the way you're raising your son.
Mm.
You know, you are doing everything right.
Mm.
And so that Daniel's children and grandchildren won't have to suffer through the same things that we today are.
Yes.
And this is something, again, that I've brought up lately to the people, is that we have a seven generations
mm-hmm.
Belief, you know, and mm-hmm. all of yes. the decisions that we Tuscarora make by great law should be made with taking in the seventh generations
mm-hmm.
consideration. You know, how will the decisions we make today affect the seventh generation? And, you know, this, you know, seventh generation, you know, it gets passed around a lot. But I mm-hmm. recently reminded people, they're not just pretty words to say.
Mm-hmm.
We have to live it. We have to do it. You know, and we can't say that we are considering the seventh generation if we're voting for people who are making it easier to pollute the waters.
That's right.
So that the seventh generation will suffer for,
mm-hmm.
you know. With the newly unearthed burial site of my people out there on the shore, we have been discussing how we want to proceed with it, and my ultimate decision has been to excavate what we can, reinter our ancestors' bones where we are now,
mm-hmm.
Because we have to think of the seventh generation, because in seven generations, the ocean's going to claim that land, and our ancestors' bones are going to be underwater.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because it's right there on the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my assertion based on, you know, the seventh generation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not just pretty words to say. We have to live by it.
That's right. We have no choice for such a time as this.
Yeah.
That's why we were created.
Right.
And all of us who are parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and siblings and family members, all of us in a heartbeat. You know, if somebody said, would you die for the children in your family? Yes, you absolutely would. No question. Right? Would you give your life to save your grandchildren or your nieces and nephews? You sure would. Absolutely. But we are at a point now where we must indigenize and decolonize, because it's not about dying for the seventh generation. It's about living for them. It's about
yes.
creating a world for them to not just survive and somehow just hang in there, you know, but to thrive and be all of who Creator called all of us to be. And the only way we can do that, I think of the wonderful Echota word, gadugi, together, united in heart and mind, together. We won't make it by ourselves. They won't make it without us. We didn't make it without them. We are all in this together. I thank
yes,
you so
are.
Much for having this beautiful conversation with me. These are really important topics, and they have a lot of depth, and you always bring such wisdom and knowledge, and I'm so grateful.
And so do you. I'm grateful to be here always. And thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for saying yes. Thank you to all of you who say yes to us every time you join us for these conversations. Our sponsors, our donors, our platforms, our friends who listen, our guests, our all of you, just every one of you that's ever done anything kind for us. We're so grateful. We're so thankful. And we are so excited for us all to be together again next time. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and we'll see you then. Silent, it came over.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.